Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show. Today is August 27th, 2007, and I'm reacting to President Bush's comparison of Iraq to Vietnam. Now, he resisted this comparison for several years. In fact, he said there was no comparison to be made with Vietnam. He actually gave a one-word answer when asked about it originally. No, there was no parallel. Because he didn't want to be associated with what most people perceive as a mistake, a fiasco, a losing effort, in which the government lied to us, and then we had to withdraw and take a hit. Well, last week, he was desperate enough that he said, there is a lesson, and that is if you pull out, millions of people will be in trouble or will die. So, I'm reminding people of the real lessons of Vietnam. And, of course, the right, as I said in the last segment, draws different lessons than the left does about Vietnam. They think we should just go in and lay waste and kick butt, and that's the lesson of Vietnam. No, it is not. We've covered five of Robert McNamara's lessons. Remember, he was the Secretary of State. I'm sorry, Secretary of Defense at the time. He was the Donald Rumsfeld of the Vietnam War. Or shall I say, Donald Rumsfeld may yet end up being the Robert McNamara of the Iraq War. But that would require Donald Rumsfeld in the next 10 to 15 years to reflect on his role in the war and look back and have some insight and say, you know, we did a lot of things wrong, and here are the lessons we should have learned. Just to recap, the first one, we misjudged the geopolitical intentions of our adversaries, and we exaggerated the dangers to the United States of their actions. Check. Same in Iraq. Number two, we viewed the people and the leaders in terms of our own experience. Check. Happened in Iraq too. Three, we underestimated the power of nationalism to motivate a people to fight and die for their beliefs and values. Check. Happened in Iraq too. Number four, our judgment of friends and foes reflected our profound ignorance of the history, culture, and politics of the people of the area. Check. We did that in Iraq too. And number five, we failed then and have since to recognize the limitations of high-tech military equipment, forces, and doctrine. Check. We did that in Iraq too. And now the last half of the list. Number six, quote, we failed to draw Congress and the American people into a full and frank discussion and debate of the pros and cons of a large-scale military involvement before we initiated the action. Well, don't get me started about the run-up to the war in Iraq. But just like McNamara is saying here about the Vietnam War, even more so in Iraq, because the Bush administration and the drumbeat to war was so strong, if people raised their hands and said, excuse me a minute, what about the Powell Doctrine? The idea that you go in with unlimited force or overwhelming force and you make sure your strategic interests are at stake and then you have an exit strategy. When that got raised, I still remember people like Sean Hannity saying, exit strategy? What are you talking about? This is war. This is like World War II. Do you think people questioned Roosevelt about an exit strategy? Come on. The Powell Doctrine is quaint and old-fashioned. No. They shouted down the opposition because they didn't have answers to those questions. And so they violated Robert McNamara's lesson number six, that in Vietnam, the administration failed to draw Congress and the American people into a full and frank discussion about the pros and cons of a large-scale military action. You know, when you ask people today that say the surge is working and that we need to stick with this, you say, well, how long do you think we'll need to stay? They don't want to say, well, we don't know. We don't know what the situation would be like. I can tell you how long. The evidence is pretty clear that counterinsurgencies, and the Pentagon folks have been pretty upfront about this, counterinsurgencies take from I guess they say 9 to 15 years. A lot of people say 9 to 10. Let's say 7 to 15 years. But we're looking at, you know, 10, 11 years probably, just like this year. Well, so far we've only lost 3,700 soldiers. I don't mean only in jest or literally. It's a lot of troops, but compared to the 58,000 we lost in Vietnam, the losses seem relatively small. But if we spend 10 years fighting a counterinsurgency, we're actually going to approach those numbers, which seemed incomprehensible just a couple of years ago. So we should today have a discussion. Are you going to stay 8 or 10 years to fight this counterinsurgency? Because if we're not, it's a waste to do it now. Number 7 on the list of mistakes the Kennedy and Johnson administration made and Robert McNamara himself made as Secretary of Defense in Vietnam. Quote, after the action got underway and unanticipated events forced us off our planned course, we did not fully explain what was happening and why we were doing what we did. Well, this one applies as well. Of course, when people say, you know, that the administration got everything wrong, you know, we would be greeted as liberators, there'd be no WMD, all of that. We hear what the same thing Rumsfeld said right from the beginning. Look, as Napoleon said, I think it was Napoleon, that as soon as you go to war, your battle plan is obsolete. So you can't anticipate all these things. You know, when there was looting in Baghdad, Rumsfeld kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, oh, come on, what do you expect? You know, there's going to be looting, we're at war. But it really is an indictment of the administration, the fact that when things got tough, they didn't really talk about what was happening and what the next step was. This administration doesn't really consult Congress or people outside it very much. It sets its course and says, you know, the notion of leadership is we decide where we're going to go and then we tell you to follow us there. No, leadership is taking the best resources you have in the country and making the right decisions to move in a certain direction. But you don't just head off in a certain direction and look over your shoulder and say, you must follow me. You build consensus, and then people gladly follow because they buy into the goals. Okay, number 8. These are the 11 reasons that Robert McNamara listed in his book, In Retrospect, in 1995. The 11 mistakes we made in Vietnam, and what you'd do differently today. Number 8. We did not recognize that neither our people nor our leaders are omniscient. Well, that applies in Iraq. Our judgment of what is in another people's or country's best interest should be put to the test of open discussion in international forums. We do not have the God-given right to shape every nation in our image or as we choose. Well, this applies in spades to Iraq. First of all, we know our leaders aren't omniscient, but they've acted that way. Bush and Cheney, right down the line, have said, we know what to do. And then they've been wrong, R-O-N-G, wrong, about just about everything that's happened. Every major issue in Iraq, they've blundered. Our judgment of what is in another country or people's best interest should be put to the test of open discussion in international forums. I still hear conservatives, when the whole issue of how we got in Iraq comes up, say, well, Bush went to the United Nations. He tried diplomacy. No, that was a fig leaf. Let's recap really quickly what happened. Tony Blair said Bush had to have Britain with him. He could not have gone to war with his coalition of the willing if it was Poland and, you know, islands in the Pacific and all that. He had to have Britain with him. He didn't have Italy. He didn't have France. He didn't have Germany. He did have Italy. But he couldn't go without Britain if he didn't have those other two, and not Russia or China, and no Arab countries to speak of. So he had to have Britain, and Tony Blair essentially said to him, look, I cannot sell this in my home country unless you go to the UN first and try diplomacy and try inspectors. And Bush said, fine, that's okay. We don't need to go to war till March, or we could put it off till at least April of 2003. So, you know, we've got a few months here. Sure, I'll go to the UN. So he goes to the UN, and they craft a careful resolution. The French signed on, the Germans signed on, because it was like what I call a Mideast peace bargain. That is, both sides get a little bit of what they want and can read into it what they want. So the French and the Germans saw it to mean that Bush would not go to war as long as the Iraqis were cooperating. And Bush saw it as, okay, if he doesn't come clean in a very short period of time, we've got him dead to rights and we can go in. And so the Bush administration tried sanctions for a couple of months, but even though the inspectors were saying, we're making progress and we don't believe that there are weapons in all these places, we're not sure there are weapons, the Bush administration took that. They even took Saddam's denial when he said, we don't have weapons. He said, well, you know what a liar is? Just the fact he would say he doesn't have weapons means he has them. And so they short-circuited the process for not a particularly good reason and announced they were going to war. It's what they intended all the time. And so back to number 8 in McNamara's list, our judgment of what's in another people's best interest should be put to the test of open discussion in international forums? No, we didn't do that. We went to convince them through Colin Powell's fiasco of a speech that you should be very afraid. This guy's dangerous. We must take him out. There was no open discussion. The last sentence of number 8 also applies. We do not have the God-given right to shape every nation in our image or as we choose. That's what we were trying to do in Iraq. And when people said, you know, they may not be ready for democracy, and I refer you back to the last segment when I talked about spiral dynamics. Look up spiral dynamics and look at the 8 stages, and you'll see that Iraq is at a very different stage than the U.S. in terms of societal development. And anybody that understands anything about levels of societal development, you wouldn't expect Iraq to be able to take on the same kind of government we have. But we thought we had the right, first of all, to go in there and impose a government on them, and B, that we'd shape it in our image. And when people said, you know, Iraq's not ready, people like Condi Rice said, well, now that's really condescending. These are my words, of course. That's really condescending to say they're not ready for freedom. Don't you know everyone yearns for freedom? It's not just us. We're not special. They all yearn for freedom. Yeah, yeah, fine, Condi, and fine to Bush and all the neocons. But we basically thought, well, since this is what we value so much, then you must value it too. That's not how it works. You have to walk in the other person's moccasins. You have to understand what drives them. So number 8 also applies. And when we come back, we're going to do the last 3.
There's a man who leads a life of anger. Every day he gets a little stranger. With every word he speaks, he yells, he whines, he shrieks. Odds are he won't understand tomorrow. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host. They've given you a time slot and taking away your brain. There's a group who spend their time complaining. It's bad enough they think that's entertaining. But their lenses are so skewed that all you can conclude, the
they're desperate for some IQ they can borrow. A rigid talk show host, batty talk show host, we're giving you a platform. It's time you were diagnosed. Right-wing talk show host, ignorant talk show host, they're giving you a time slot and taking away your brain. Where the easy answers you may find, simple thoughts they come from simple minds. So notice who they blame and examine all their claims. Odds are you'll see through all their illogic. Right-wing talk show host, pompous talk show host, we've given you a forum, but you're still as deaf as a post.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and we are going to cover the last three of the 11 mistakes that Robert McNamara pointed out the United States made in the war in Vietnam. And so far, all eight of them, ding, 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 apply perfectly to Iraq. Those that don't pay attention during history class are condemned to repeat it. We're talking to you, W. So, number nine. We did not hold to the principle that U.S. military action should be carried out only in conjunction with multinational forces supported fully and not merely cosmetically by the international community. Well, I guess we're talking about the coalition of the willing, right? I mentioned in the last segment that the president had to have Great Britain with us. But when people criticized in the debate, when John Kerry said, you didn't get the international community to go with you, he said, you forgot Poland. Like one country makes the difference. When George Bush's father got the coalition together, he had to go into, throw Saddam out of Kuwait in 1990. He had the cooperation, military or financial, of 55 countries and the implicit cooperation of more than 100. Almost all of the Muslim countries signed up with him. It was a masterful job of pulling together a coalition. He had the Russians and the Chinese on board, and he certainly had the Europeans on board, including France and Germany. George W. Bush could get none of them to support him. And when the UN wouldn't give him the final resolution he wanted, they tried and they tried, and the countries wouldn't give in and let Bush go to war with international authority, he said, since the United Nations won't enforce their own agreements, resolutions they passed, we'll enforce them for them. And to this day, he claims all he was doing was enforcing the United Nations resolutions. No, that's not how it works. You don't get to enforce the United Nations resolution. Only the United Nations can. And he couldn't muster the support, so he went in on his own, and he violated number nine, that the principle that U.S. military action should be carried out in conjunction with multinational forces. That's how you get in and out without it costing you $1 trillion, which this will ultimately cost us, and I don't even want to guess how many lives it's going to cost us ultimately. Number 10, quote, we fail to recognize that in international affairs, as in other aspects of life, there may be problems for which there are no immediate solutions. At times, We may have to live with an imperfect, untidy world. Meaning, while Saddam in power is not the best thing we can imagine, going in may cause more trouble than it's worth, so you might have to live with it. About a week ago, the network, somebody uncovered the 1994 interview with Dick Cheney, in which he explained why he was challenged. Shouldn't we have gone to Baghdad in 1990? Well, he was in the Bush administration, Bush 41 administration. He said, no, we made the right decision. The president correctly gauged that it could be a quagmire if we got in. You've got Sunni versus Shia. What do you put in its place? He ticked off the list of reasons why you shouldn't tear down a government without knowing how it's going to go. And then after 9/11, he was so afraid, it's the only explanation I can find, that he decided it was worth the risk, and he ignored all the lessons that he already knew. And he ignored number 10 here, that there are no immediate solutions at times, and you have to live with a messy world sometimes. And finally, Robert McNamara's number 11, the 11th mistake the United States made in Vietnam. Quote, underlying many of these errors lay our failure to organize the top echelons of the executive branch and to deal effectively with the extraordinary complex range of political and military issues. Well, you know, I don't even remember in Vietnam how much coverage it got, the inefficiencies and the mistakes that were made. We knew that William Westmoreland had figures every week that got doctored, and we weren't given the true counts and all of that. But Vietnam couldn't have been as bad as what we've seen with this administration in terms of, quote, our failure to organize the top echelons of the executive branch to deal effectively with the complex range of political and military issues. This war has been so badly mismanaged, it proves the old adage that Republicans are better off in the minority as the opposition party because they don't believe in governance. That is, they don't believe in government. They don't believe it can be done, that, you know, you can manage things. And so when they get in, how could they possibly manage things? So they don't manage things very well. So that's Robert McNamara's list of the 11 mistakes. Let's run through it in summary. So here are the 11 mistakes that Robert McNamara said in his 1995 book, in retrospect, the United States made. He made, the Kennedy and Johnson administrations made when it came to the Vietnam War. And every one of them applies to Iraq clearly and precisely. Number one, we misjudged then and have since the geopolitical intentions of our adversaries. We exaggerated the dangers to the United States of their actions. Number two, we viewed the people and leaders of South Vietnam in terms of our own experience. We totally misjudged the political forces within the country. Number three, we underestimated the power of nationalism to motivate a people to fight and die for their beliefs and values. You know, we tend to think we're the only ones that are this nationalistic that would fight for our country. No, it's the world over. Number four, our judgment of friend and foe alike, there's a reference from Kennedy's inaugural address, our judgment of friend and foe alike reflected our profound ignorance of the history, culture, and politics of the people in the area and the personalities and habits of their leaders. Number five, we failed then and have since to recognize the limits of modern high technology military equipment, forces, and doctrine. Oh yeah. Number six, we failed to draw Congress and the American people into a full and frank discussion of the pros and cons of large-scale military involvement. You are telling me, before we initiated the action. Number seven, after the action got underway, unanticipated events forced us off our planned course. We did not fully explain what was happening and why we were doing what we did. Number eight, we did not recognize that neither our people nor leaders are omniscient. Our judgment of what's in another people's or country's best interest should be put to the test of open discussion in international forums. Number nine, we do not hold to the principle. We did not hold to the principle that U.S. military action should be carried out only in conjunction with multinational forces supported fully by the international community. Number 10, we fail to recognize that in international affairs, as in other aspects of life, there may be problems for which there are no immediate solutions. We may have to live with an untidy world. And finally, number 11, underlying many of these errors lay our failure to organize the top echelons of the executive branch to deal effectively with the extraordinary complex range of political and military issues. That is Robert McNamara's list of the 11 mistakes he made, the Kennedy and Johnson administrations made, in Vietnam. And yet, the president, the vice president, and the neocons went ahead and made every one of them in the last 6 years. So, next time, let's make sure that we pay attention in history class, or we will be condemned to repeat it. That's going to do it for this edition of the Andy Finn Show. We'll be back next week, next Monday night. Until then, you can read my writings and listen to the podcast of this show at my website, andyfinn.us. That's andyfinn.us. Until then, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.